Benzinga's Cannabis Capital Conference returns to Miami Beach on April 11th and 12th. I may be biased, but I'm telling you, this event is a can't miss. Join us to build the foundation of your next game-changing deal with CEOs and decision makers from leading companies in the industry. We're talking about the next wave of businesses, strategies from the most profitable businesses, and exactly what investors are looking for in a challenging market. Go to bzcannabis.com to meet your next investor, co-founder, and new friends. A little pro tip from me, right now tickets are $1,000 cheaper than prices at the door. Get yours now. Welcome in again. Thank you all for tuning in. Javier Hasse, Argentinian action figure, and his friend. What is going on?
Partner. That is Nati. I'd forgotten my AirPods, and I was like, dude, I'll drive you crazy.
Yeah, if you're listening to this on Apple or Spotify later on, Javier just had a guest, and we love her. She's amazing. But that being said, Javi, what's up, man?
Doing great. Excited. I'm heading out to Barcelona tomorrow for Spanibus. If you will be in Barca for the next week, I'll be there all week. Just hit me up, Javier Hasse, on social media or Javier Hasse at Benzinga.com. I would be happy to meet up and find out what you're doing. Create some content around it, of course. You know, it's a new market for us.
Javi, can I ask you a question? Why do you go to events? Like, what do you personally get out of industry events?
I rarely enjoy events. I got to be very honest.
Okay, Javi, that's not the answer I needed you to give.
wait. But there are specific events that I find very useful, right? Like, and for me, I go a little bit for the content, mostly for the networking and the people, right? I used to go to a bunch of events. Now there are so many that you need to pick and choose very wisely, right? So actually this year I'm going to Spanibus, which is at the same time as South by Southwest, which also has a very important cannabis track. I've been a speaker on that track and a judge for 3 years, you know, for their pitch contest. And it was a tough decision, like, but I needed to check out a different market, and Spanibus is the largest cannabis.
You did get to where I was going. You did get to where I was going. And industry events, y'all, if you don't go, you should. We obviously have a major one coming up, Miami, April 11th and 12th for cannabis, April 13th for psychedelics. But you go to events for the people. You can go for education. Yeah. You can go for brand visibility. You can go to speak, but you go for the people, right? And you, like, I just saw a post on Twitter the other day, a really, really, really cool post, who she said she invested over $25,000 going to conferences in her first year of owning a business. Mm-hmm. And she didn't stop traveling, and she didn't stop sacrificing until she had a full client book. That really rung with me. And I just wanted to point that out, man. You know, you said you're heading to ICBC, so just wanted to take the advantage and of that comment and say, go to these events, y'all. Go to our event. Go to MJ Unpacked. Go to MJ Biz. Go to these events and meet cool people and meet awesome reporters like Javi, awesome industry leaders like the amazing personality we have on our show coming up, Wendy Berger, who participates with one of the largest operators in the industry, as well as others growing their business. We'll find out more later. But I'm getting off my soapbox. But that's
I totally get it, and I agree, right? And but you have to pick and choose wisely, right? There are a few events where all the people really come together. And for those, that is where I find the value, right? Having individual calls with everyone and staying, you know, keeping relationships alive and nurtured takes a lot of time. And usually, you know, when you're going through your day, doing emails, writing, whatever it is you do, right? It's hard to carve out time for everyone.
Yeah.
But when you go to an event, it's like suddenly it's like, okay, there's these 2 days where your regular work is kind of put on pause to a certain extent, you're still answering emails, but I have an autoresponder, right? And people understand that I will take a little bit longer. I will not necessarily write articles on that day, right? But I know that I can get all, like, so many things done in one day, right? Like, everyone is there and it's just like, okay, spend 50 minutes with this person, 20 minutes with this person, a half hour with this person, have a short conversation with this other person, go for dinner or drinks with another person.
And, y'all, right? And even Javier is the most in-demand person at events. You are the most in-demand person I've ever seen at an event. I mean, people come to Benzinga Cannabis Capital Conference literally for Javier. I'm like, it doesn't matter. Like, nothing else matters. And there's a great song, Nothing Else Matters. That's that said, Javier, we are here to shed some light on what's happening in the industry, my friend. So let's get a few news items before we get to our interview. But that said, I'm a little blind to today. I didn't get a chance to do Cannabis Daily this morning. We had a board meeting. But that being said, what matters right now is there are a lot of stocks in the news today. And I don't know where to start. So give us a little insight there, my friend.
To me, you know, one of the top news items that caught my eye this week was Cowen. So, you know, this is an analyst firm, right? And it's a Wall Street analyst led research firm, by the way, that was covering about like 30, I think, cannabis stocks. And they discontinued coverage of the cannabis sector following its acquisition by TD Bank Group, so TD Ameritrade. We did chat with TD Bank specifically asking why they were not covering the sector, and you know it seems like they might be going back to that in the future, but for now they're withdrawing their coverage relating to U.S. multi-state operators especially.
Do they need to make their own choice as an institution as opposed to a legacy? An inorganic choice from Cowen?
I would think so. We still have to find out what is TD's actual position when it comes to cannabis, right? We don't know if they're for or against it, right? So I'm going to read you some of the comments, right? I think it doesn't make sense for me to tell you. this person said, Cowen has been a leader for in-depth actionable research across equity markets, including emerging growth sectors like cannabis. Following this acquisition, we're not covering these U.S. multi-state operators, but would reevaluate it if the SAFE Act is passed or if federal regulatory postures change. The team will continue to provide macro trends based on consumer data and insights, and will continue to provide U.S. policy and regulatory insight for the cannabis sector through Cowen's Washington Research Group, just so you know.
Well, good on them, I guess. I say that sarcastically. That said, I mean, yeah. I don't know. There's nothing we can do about it. We're just kind of viewers on the sideline. But I do think this is a little bit of a, I don't know. I don't really fully understand this move. There are a lot of amazing businesses in this industry that deserve coverage, especially in this U.S. side of the market. That said, I mean, there's still plenty of things covering.
Like, you know, yeah. It has to do with volatility in the sector, with low trading volatility.
There's right? no They're volatility in their cannabis. Coverage on...
okay. Whatever you say.
Yeah, then all individual investors just turned off the show. All right, keep us moving, man. Yeah, Vivian Azer is an amazing person. Like, Vivian Azer, amazing insights, amazing, you know, thought leader, but, you know, ideally, we can still get her insights, you know, here and there. But that being said,
we will.
Okay, I'm sure. Cool. Sorry. All right. Well, we still get Pablo. We still get Jefferies. We still get some other really cool analysts talking about it. Pablo's still very active, man. He's all over this space. That's where I get a note from him every day. But that said, Javier, keep us rolling, man. We got some earnings. Jazz Pharmaceuticals came out. Anything to note for them? Anything for GW in there?
Just like a small surge in Jazz in general. GW seems to be performing steadily. Nothing out of the ordinary, but you can go to benzinga.com/cannabis to check out the takeaways from these earnings or from the earnings report. Also, two recommended reads, both by Nico Rodriguez in our team. One is an interview with Glasshouse's Kyle Kazan, who says elected officials need to do what they promised they were going to do. At a certain point, he even says, you know, if you're getting people in prison for this, come get me in prison. See how that works out. And then a very, very interesting feature on Grower IQ about software and how to avoid costly mistakes and save time and money using a good ERP.
All I'm going to say is some executives shouldn't have access to social media. But that's all I'll say there. That being said, I don't disagree with him at all, Kyle Kazan. We have to keep fighting. Speaking of, we may have a prominent person he works with on the criminal justice side and the lobbying side join us in Miami. Ideally, we can announce that soon, but some great speakers there. With that being said, man, shall we jump to a person that's way cooler than us?
Sure.
I'm so excited. One shout out. One shout out.
One shout out.
Always one shout
out. TRP. I know you like TRP.
I do like TRP.
They spun off Cookies. And they announced through Benzinga, this was a Benzinga exclusive, that they had partnered with the very, very, very influential influencer, by the way, and content creator, Koala Puffs. She's one of my favorite, migrated from Ukraine to the U.S., has been generating content for several years, has a million followers, and they dropped a very, very cool cannabis line. Very, very well recommended. I would say go check it out.
If you don't know TRP... Right,
Yeah,
I was just saying, if you don't know TRP, they are, you know, flower behind Cookies. I mean, they spun off from Cookies, of course. They've worked with Dr. Green Thumbs, with Be Real, of course. They work with Koala Puffs. I mean, kind of under the radar, but brand-building product. It's really, really interesting. And I think there might be some more news out of them soon. So keep an eye on them. Kind of an up-and-coming company there.
One more I remembered. Erykah Badu. Launched a new cannabis line with Cookies, with Burner's Cookies. So shout out and best of love, you know, to Erykah. And
you know what? I bet Wendy can chat on this here in a second. So we'll just make this the lead in to having her on. But we have a really cool couple of crowdfunding bits of news. First is SuperNet, who Michael Tseng, if you don't know him, he's really creating a really cool ACH payments platform over there. I love SuperNet. If you guys don't know that, it might be worth taking a look at. And Javi said peace. But we also have Happy, a beverage company in both marijuana and hemp. But Happy is really cool. We're just talking about crowdfunding. So SuperNet and then Happy. We'll have Wendy chat more about Happy if she wants to. But that being said, Aaron Thomas, let's bring over our guest, Wendy Berger. So excited for this. There she is. Thank you so much for joining, Wendy. How are you?
I am fantastic and so happy to be with you both, Javier and Ellen. Thanks so much for having me on today. And I have already taken a few notes that I have to follow up on. I don't know TRP, and I am a crazy Erykah Badu fan.
Look at that.
9 times.
Wait, say that one more time. Sorry.
I've seen Erykah Badu in concert 8 or 9 times, so I'm a huge fan.
We should have led in with her music. Come on. What were we thinking? That's awesome. But you also know Happy, right? You're also affiliated with Lisa over there?
I am a very happy, happy investor. Lisa Hurwitz is among the crazy smart, amazing, interesting group of women leading in this industry. And I love this product. I love the effect and I love the taste. So full confession, I'm an investor, so I'm totally biased. But I invested after we tasted the product.
Yeah, I think it's worth us doing this because your insights are so important. Your sound is a little underwatery for me right now. So I just want to make sure that we fully hear you because you are the bee's knees. Definitely want to make sure we understand everything. But just to reiterate, Wendy is a investor in Happy, but they are beverage, and they're both focused in marijuana and hemp, which I find super interesting. But Wendy, can you hear us? You might be muted. Now. You might want to change your settings there to make sure that it's on the headphones. We might need our producer to pop in. Aaron Thomas, the voice of God.
Okay, I'll hop in real quick. Wendy, do you see the three dots in your small window? Oh, you got AirPods. That should work too.
Love some AirPods. Who doesn't love AirPods? Come on. I bet you all have AirPods watching. Javi's got them in.
They made me. I was not a fan. I'm sold on them now, to be honest.
I am amazingly tech challenged for somebody who's pretty tech sophisticated. I have a brand new laptop, and on every platform, the sound is different. So I really apologize, but I'm totally excited to be here and be happy. So now everything is
no
really
worries.
Good.
You sound wonderful now, no y'all. Thank you for for staying in. Super happy to have you. So let's just dive in. Wendy, tell us a little bit about you and how and why you're in cannabis.
Oh my God, I came to this business in like three different ways, but I've been in the industry for about 8 years. And my journey into the industry took about 15 years. I really, it started with my very first experience going into a dispensary about 17 years ago in the Palm Springs, California area. And
really?
I can remember the moment so clearly because I drove up to the dispensary. I was able to get a recommendation because I own a home in California. So I had a California ID, and you could walk down the street in Venice and say your knee hurts and you could get a recommendation. So I've always been a casual consumer. I like my martinis, I like my wine, and I like my marijuana. And I went into a dispensary and I wasn't sure what was worse, walking in with cash, walking out with product, or the 5 awful minutes I spent inside the dispensary with what I used to refer to as a high-functioning stoner. In hindsight, mm-hmm. The person was a low-functioning stoner. And I remember standing there going, this doesn't have to be awful. Why do I feel awful? Why am I scared for my own personal safety? This should be an experience somewhere between Walgreens and Lululemon. And the fact is that the bartenders really do have the knowledge. What they didn't have was the training. They either had no retail training or no training on how to actually listen to what the patients were asking for. And so I am a serial entrepreneur, and I very clearly walked out of there. I am going to find a way to get into this business. And I spent 7 years in California trying to find investments and people that I could invest in, because I really invest in people. And I couldn't find anybody I could get comfortable with. It was like the Wild West.
Wow.
Still is in some ways. And I'm from Illinois. And when it became clear that medical marijuana was going to become legal in Illinois, I started talking to everyone I could about it. And it started quickly sort of bubbling up, this group of people who were forming entities to apply for licenses. I met with 35 different groups. And after a period of 6 months of meeting with 35, and in the meantime, I educated myself on the industry, Ben Kovler and what was to become Green Thumb Industries stood out for me head and shoulders. So I decided to truly believe in myself. I believe in Ben, and I think outside of Ben Kovler, who's the largest individual investor in Green Thumb. And here we are 8 years later. We just released earnings a couple days ago. We hit over $1 billion in revenue, so I kind of laugh.
Insane.
Our little company is now a $1 billion company, and Ben's leadership has been truly extraordinary. We're following his vision. And just the last piece of it is, I also have long been a believer in a combination of Eastern and Western medicine. I suffer from a vestibular disorder. My neurologist and otolaryngologist had me try every medication, generally in the family of medications used to treat people with seizure disorders. I was diagnosed with this 23 years ago, and if I never told you, you would never, ever know. And the medications that people take for seizure disorders are the types of medications where the side effects are sometimes much worse than what they're treating. So long-term side effects and short-term fogginess. And I'm a crazy high-functioning person. I get up at 5 every day. I've done 41 triathlons. I am a super active, high-energy person. So this notion of like living my life in a fog wasn't going to work for me, and marijuana was the answer. So I came to it from both an entrepreneurial perspective and medical perspective, and I believe in plant-based medicine. This is plant-based medicine. The plant is part of your history.
It's interesting that you bring up how off-putting that first experience was. When it was 2017, and I was researching for a book I was writing on cannabis business, right? And the first, like the intro to the book is about this guy called Hunter Garth, who served in the U.S. military and did several tours and came back and was suffering. Long story short, you know, he moves to Colorado, leaves everything behind to be able to medicate, and he finds out, like, he goes to medical cannabis dispensaries and feels very uncomfortable. Finds the attitude that security guards had very off-putting, and he created a business from that, right? But you know, it took me many, many years to really understand how can buying weed legally be off-putting, right? Like, I've had shady dealers, right? Like, I know what off-putting is, and that experience to me didn't seem like the worst thing you could possibly experience. But then over the years, a lot of people had told me this same thing, right? Can you illustrate a little bit of you know, what makes a cannabis retail experience really good nowadays, right? Like, you described what you didn't like back then, but what makes a perfect cannabis retail experience among the ones that exist right now, and what could be improved to create the perfect cannabis retail experience?
So I don't think there's a perfect right now, but it's a great question. It's something I think about personally all the time. It's certainly something that Green Thumb is always working to get better on. But one of the really big challenges is, if you're designing a retail store, you say, okay, who is my customer? And then you design for that customer. Who's the customer in cannabis? Everyone, and everyone over the age of 21 is your customer. Medical, adult use, recreational. How do you design a retail experience? You don't want it to look like Walgreens, where you're going in looking for things. You want people to spend time. I think education is such an important component, and even just getting people to walk in the door. So I still hear this all the time, primarily from women who have this preconceived notion that a cannabis dispensary is going to look like an old-fashioned head shop. It's going to be dirty inside. It's going to be rows and rows and rows of pipes and bongs, and they're worried about who will see them. So I think you really have to start to think about the exterior of the storefront. How do you create a welcoming, warm environment while dealing with local regulations? Right? So some states say you cannot have clear windows. Some states you can. So you've got this state by state, right? We still have the moats around every state. And in every state, you're trying to design something that complies with the regulations, but you want consistency across your brand, right? I use Lululemon as the example, because I know every Lululemon in the country. I can walk in and go find exactly what I want, and I know how the store is organized. So it's a real challenge to, and add that you can't merchandise, right? People can't touch in most states the product, right? You can't even pick up the box in a lot of places, and we are all tactile and visual people. So I think you have to see locality by locality, pull out the best things. If I can touch an empty box, put the empty box out to touch. Bright lights, warm colors, everything that helps to decrease the stigma, right? We want people to feel like they can walk in, whatever their knowledge level, and be comfortable. And feel comfortable with what they're buying.
Yeah. You know, and again, we're talking to Wendy Berger here, board director of Green Thumb Industries, which is OTC GTBIF. Just FYI, we don't have that on the screen. But that being said, Wendy, I want to follow up real quick on what you said about the consumer, which is everybody, right? But in this industry, I was just speaking to somebody the other day from Alabama, and they're based in Alabama. They live in Alabama, but they work in cannabis. And yeah, you know, there's a general disdain for how cannabis strains are named, for the general branding of them. So where do you feel like we are? How are you all approaching this at GTI in terms of creating brands that are actually relatable to everybody and not just something that's frozen Jesus or purple devil, right? You know, like how do we get past that? How do we grow up a little bit and make sure this industry is representing who we want it to represent?
I do really think strain names. So let's segment flower buyers from all else. On flower buyers and even new flower buyers, I do think the strain names are off-putting. Purple Haze, you know, at least with some of the Afghan-related strains, you have some sense that it may be from a place that you know. I don't think, let's take a, I'm a 56-year-old woman. Let's take a 56-year-old woman who wants to replace her nightly wine with marijuana, and she remembers smoking it, and she wants something that works fast and where she knows the dosing. She's going to go for flower. You know, some of these flower names, they're not going to resonate. So you're really going to have to depend on the bartender, the patient care specialist to guide you through. But I don't think it helps the industry to have these fun OG names. Now, there's a huge segment of the industry that loves those, and there's a small segment that knows the history of them. But when you have the geneticist naming the strains, it's a huge disconnect by the time you get to retail. We're growing up on all this stuff, and I think that evolves. When it comes time to brands of, let's say, a brand of flower, like GTI's Rhythm brand, Rhythm has a feeling and a brand message and a brand story that we believe is authentic and that we really believe resonates, the same way our Bebo edibles and our Bebo vapes. And, you know, I like to think of our Incredibles as the Snicker bar of weed, right? It's a great value. It's a brand you can find in a lot of states, and it's a brand that resonates with people. So branding, marketing, packaging, continuing to evolve in this industry is super challenging, but that's where the opportunity lies.
Oh, what an interesting way to segment to my next question here is, what is the true value of a company like GTI, right? Is it the brands? I mean, when alcohol dives into this industry, when tobacco dives in, when pharma, if pharma dives in, right? When these other industries, you know, start to accept cannabis products in their retail stores, you know, what are they going to value? And to me, it's the brands, but I'm curious what, you know, somebody like you who sits in these conversations, who sits in these, who has the data, who understands what the consumer wants and probably has conversations with these leaders outside of cannabis, what is going to be important for companies to focus on brand wise or asset wise as we move into the next year or two?
Great question. I think fundamentally what, let's say someone looking at this industry from outside of it, it needs to look at the team, right? The team comes first because it is that team that's innovating. And you want a team that isn't stuck in one mode. So first the team. But I think every brand has to have its authentic story. And it is very hard to have a brand that you expect to resonate with everyone. Right? So starting to segment it with Dog Walkers. You know, let's use an example of our brand, Dog Walkers. It's got a clear story. Every dog walker that's purchased has a donation made to an animal-related charity. So, right, there's that giving and good component. And it people resonate with that. I think continuing to segment brands, knowing who your target is. And again, sometimes you have to make the hard calls of picking your target, right? Rhythm wants to be the flower for everybody, but as there's more noise and more choices, it's very hard to be one product for everyone. And so I think if we use the liquor industry as a parallel and you start to think about some of the designer celebrity affiliated tequilas, I'm an investor in a brand of bourbon called Heaven's Door. Heaven's Door because Bob Dylan is our partner and Bob Dylan formulated it and Bob Dylan designed the bottle.
As a Kentuckian, I would like to sample this.
I'm going to send you a bottle.
I have not had Heaven's Door, but
it's fantastic. But sticking to Kindle, yeah, on another podcast. I think that brands with authentic stories that resonate, backed up by products that do what they say, right? If you're going to have a nano in your product or it's nano based, I expect it to work within 12 minutes. And my tolerance for it not working in 12 minutes, if you're creating, I'll give you an example of some of my, last night, I'll give you a real life example. Last night I had a Garden Society Blissful Rest chocolate. I did a 10 milligram and half. I'm about a 2.5 to 5 milligram doser. Because of the way cannabinoids bind too fast, it did what it said it was going to do. Within 12 minutes, I could feel the effect. One of the problems we have is dosing. And there's still, because we don't have standards, people have to go down this rabbit hole of experimentation. People have a very limited tolerance. The analogy or story I always tell is, one of my friends was getting on an airplane and he said, I want to take an edible before I get on the airplane so I can sleep on the airplane. I said, great, here are my instructions. And this was 7 or 8 years ago, so the product wasn't as well developed. Here are my instructions to you. Listen to me. Please take this piece and wait 45 minutes to an hour. Of course, he waited 20, 25 minutes, took another piece, didn't feel anything, took another piece. I get a text from the airplane. I can't feel my legs. Ha, ha, ha.
Oh, no.
This is not good. And so we have a problem. If you were buying a bag of chips anywhere in the world, the standard serving size for a bag of chips is 28 grams. We have anything like that, right? I know that 28 grams of chips are going to be anywhere from 100 to 230 calories. Mm-hmm. We need to try to move towards that because that doesn't help our stigma. When someone has a bad experience from dosing or they haven't taken the time, it's like alcohol. Did you guys get it right the first few times you drank?
No.
The first time I got sick on gin was the last time I ever drank gin.
Yeah.
Same here.
Rum's not a part of my daily or weekly or monthly anything.
Brown liquors make some people angry. Don't drink brown liquors. But the tolerance that people have for that kind of experimentation is very low. They don't have time. They want relief. And think about what happened during the pandemic. No one could sleep and everyone was suffering from anxiety. And they're looking for quick fixes because everyone was suffering. I think it's really important to try to get to some kind of standardization. It's very difficult. There's no easy answer. But we've got to all be thinking hard about it. And that'll help us attract outsiders into the industry. Like, this industry needs outside capital. And we have to reduce the barriers to bring in that capital.
You were talking a lot about, targeting consumers, about value, and both you and Elliot mentioned the word value many, many times. And I'm thinking, right, where do value brands fit into all of this, right? Like, for, say, a consumer like you who's sophisticated, does a value brand appeal to you as well, or do you only want high-end cannabis? Is a value brand created for younger skewing demographics? I mean, what are your insights into this specific?
Well, I'll use me as an example and then I'll tell you what I think. Like, sometimes when I go to a candy store, I want a Snicker bar, and sometimes I want like a fancy chocolate. But there is something that evokes maybe nostalgia of a Snicker bar. And frankly, they're just good versus a super high-end chocolate. I want to spend $12 on a chocolate bar. Sometimes I want to spend $1 on a chocolate bar. But I do think different messages and values, people relate to them. Let's take somebody who's working. I'm going to use kind of a blue collar analogy. And every Friday they get paid, and every Friday they used to go to the liquor store and buy one six pack. they're going to drink a six-pack every week for the next month. They don't have the cash in their pockets, and they're buying the six-pack even though the 24-pack case would be a better value for them. That is not the value in the moment. So you have to think about the value in the moment as well as the greater value. And then there are those of us who, you know, it's like designer shoes. Why do I spend money on designer shoes? Because it makes me feel good. Why do I like Bebo? Bebo is like a purse accessory. When I pull out a Bebo vape and I put that rose gold vape on a table or on a desk, everybody wants to touch it and feel it. And now it's become an accessory, a pocket accessory, a purse accessory. Some of the stuff. Have you seen Drew Martin's packaging? It's spectacular, even the magnetic closure. Aaron Gore's Garden Society packaging.
Oh, yeah.
I love Garden Society. Yeah.
I love Garden Society. How about Pure Beauty? Amelka has created the simplest brand that's beautiful. And that one resonates with men and women. You might think it's sort of, you know, forward, but when we look at who's buying their products, it's everyone.
Wendy, we're well over our time, but as you can tell, both Javi and I are obsessed with you. So we really appreciate you joining. But one thing I do want to emphasize is we are supporting women throughout the month of March. You know, we are only wanting to make sure that we bring the women leaders to the forefront on our podcast throughout the month. So starting off with you has been a privilege. You're obviously one of the most influential people at one of the most influential companies in this industry. So it truly is a pleasure. We thank you for your time. This will not be the last. As much time as you can give us, we will obviously take. But thank you so much for helping us kick this off.
Elliot and Javier, thank you so much for having me. And most importantly, thank you for shining the spotlight on women in this industry and this industry.
Of course. We'll talk to you soon, Wendy. Thank you again.
Thanks.
Oh my God. I mean,
what a wealth of knowledge and fun, dude. Like, I honestly, yeah. I wish the audio was better. We'll have to do another show just to repeat.
Well, this is why you have people like Aaron Thomas. No, this is why you have people like Aaron Thomas, because y'all listen to this podcast later. I guarantee you, Aaron will fix the audio as best we can. But Wendy's amazing. Wendy's what?
That is a big promise. You're dropping.
No. I have all the faith in the world. I have all the faith in the world in AT. But the insights Wendy dropped on us about brands, about trust in your retail fronts. I mean, just about what we can expect from in the industry and what we want from brands over the next 12, 18 months. I mean, it's truly insightful. So we thank her so much. Yeah,
Look at that comment in the chat. Change agent saying already in the investor relations page of Green Thumb.
Boom, change agent. Definitely. Look, so they, I can see one that. Thing, one
Wendy,
thing we
please.
Yeah. Wendy, tell Ben, will you tell Ben for me? one thing that, oh crap, I lost my train of thought just because I'm so excited about that. But change agent, let us know what you think if you buy a few shares. That being said, Javi, any thoughts for you, man, on the interview before we wrap up here?
I found it super interesting. I would discuss like more like these general topics forever, right? We often just focus very much in financials and hard data and a lot of cannabis retail is driven by feeling, by sentiment, but by how your senses react to the experience, to the brand, to the product, right? And I think Wendy really understands that and identified it very early on. I was blown away when she said, like, the first time I went to a dispensary was 17 years ago. I didn't even know the word dispensary 17 years ago.
17 years ago, I thought marijuana was literally for the devil. Like, I was a Baptist kid, preacher's kid in Kentucky. And here we are hosting a cannabis podcast. We can all change for the better, y'all.
Look at that.
That said, y'all, thank you so much for tuning in. Really appreciate it. BZCannabis.com for tickets to Miami. Hopefully you'll see Wendy there, but you will see amazing leaders like many of the women she works with, like GTI, like all the tier one MSOs, like 4 to 5 federal politicians, and many more celebrities to be announced in the next few weeks. This show is going to kill it, y'all. The industry is struggling, but people are still working. People are still hungry. People are still fighting for success. And this is the place to be in April, without a doubt. With that being said, Javier, thank you as always for your time. We'll be back with Cannabis Daily tomorrow morning. Subscribe to our Cannabis Daily newsletter. That's all the plugs I can talk about right now. I'm plugged out. All right, Aaron, let's wrap up, my guy.